Hello, with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Thursday, the 13th of May, 2010. I'm Hereward Fenton, bringing you the information that we've gleaned, and we've got a lot of it to wade through tonight. A lot of filth we've got to wade through, unfortunately. Welcoming Josh Jackson to the show. Josh, how's your week been?
It's been grand.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. I'm in kind of the state at the moment of a bit like one of those detectives in a movie about, you know, serial killers who's got the kind of bleary-eyed, haggard look from finding out so many dark secrets about human nature and having looked into the mouth of the beast, as it were.
So you're the cop or the serial killer?
I hope I'm not the bad guy.
No, you're definitely not the bad guy.
But when,
in fact,
yeah,
I think I know exactly what you mean. I've had days like that, and folks.
Well, it's not days for me. It's been weeks. I mean, I've been trawling through the filth that we have to engage with to do the show.
Yeah, and it's literally you feel like you've got the entire Pacific Ocean to wade through, and you've got a thimble to sort of your boat's sinking, and you've got a thimble to try and bail your boat out with.
Yeah, and you know, and people say, well, you know, people quite often say, and I agree with them, you know, why do you focus on dark things? Why not be happy? You know, I totally agree with that. Okay, I would rather be happy. I would rather think nice thoughts. You know, go for a walk in the park, pick flowers, right? But somebody's got to do this job, okay? Now, you know.
Well, somebody has to be the town crier.
Well, yes, and someone's got to dig up this information out of the, you know, someone's got to wade through the filth to find this stuff. It's not as if it's hard to find, but it's there everywhere. We're surrounded by it. And, what's happened is that people often, you know, who say, well, let's just be happy, you know, let's just go out, have some fun, you know, don't get me down, don't be heavy, you know, they know they're surrounded by filth. And that's kind of the way they say that.
Well, I think what causes, and if you see the mass pandemic of the systemic nature of, it's everywhere, of depression. I mean, so many people, one in, I don't know if this is an actual statistic, but within my circle of friends, at least, you know, one in 10, one in five, you know, some crazy amount of people have either been on antidepressants or are on antidepressants. And, and you know, a lot of people don't admit it, but you can tell when they are on them, because if you start talking about antidepressants or serotonin reuptake inhibitors in any way, they start getting a bit shirty or sweaty under the collar.
Oh, yeah, and they don't like to have it criticized, yeah.
They don't like to be criticized because they feel like they're, you know, it's saving them and stuff. Now, you know, the reason is because we know that, I think everybody knows, just like Lennon Cohen said, everybody knows all the crap that's going on. It's just a lot of people just want to stick their fingers in their ears and go la 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 and pretend it's not happening, thus feeling sort of slowly feeling depressed. Of course, it's not, you know, direct. It's not directly that. And it's not at all that for a lot of people too. But I think for a lot of people in society, you know, really, you feel like a little bit helpless. And I think it's important, Harold, you know, the days that I feel really like, wow, man, this is so heavy, all the stuff that I've seen, the corruption and the stuff that we expose on this show. And all you can do is sort of almost laugh at it, because, you know, all you can do is expose it and educate yourself and educate your family and your loved ones And that's all you can do. And expose the information further, of course. But educate yourself and have your family do, you know, take that information on and build a better life for yourselves. Because how you change the world is by changing yourself. You know, we are change.
Yeah, yeah, hear, hear. Okay, folks, let's get through some of the top headlines for tonight. I'm going to run through some headlines and we might come back to pick over and investigate them in more depth. But there's quite a lot, and there's actually some from last week that I neglected to bring up. So start with the top of the list. Half a million tipped to join class action on bank fees. A breaking story right at the moment, affects all Australians. The banks are facing a massive class action on their outrageous fees. And anyone who's ever had a bank account can actually join this class action. So this is a really excellent one.
Yeah, I want to join this. I'm so up for it. I want to be first in line.
Yeah, yeah. And
I mean, the amount of bank fees I've been charged, I went and did my taxes the other day. It comes to like $2,000, $3,000 over the last 2 years. That's from, you know, I had a business, so there was some overdraws here and there or whatever, you know, they're just crazy. It's in a crazy amount, like $20. It's like, say your bank account goes down to, you know, $1 and you have some direct debit take out $5. All of a sudden you're down four, but then it's down by $30 minus 30 because the bank takes out 23 or whatever. And you're like, and then you ring up and say, oh, why is there minus $23? Oh, well, we had to, you know, you had a dishonor fee.
Yeah, look, I've experienced heaps of this over the years, you know, and actually I did get some letters recently from one bank that they've actually cut their fees from $30 to $5. And they did this a few months ago, but this was actually in anticipation of this. I heard that on the news today.
$30 for a fee is so ludicrous. And I know that people have taken the banks to court in England because of the same thing. And not only that, to basically saying, hey, why are you charging us $30? It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost you $30.
That's correct.
There were certain fees that when you transferred money from one account to another or something, it would cost you $5 or some crazy fee they had in Britain. And they just basically said, hang on, this is crazy. It costs you nothing. Why are you charging this? And they took it to court and won. But, you know, the thing is, folks, if you don't like your bank, leave your bank. And this is that's what I did. I just went, I'm over this. And I looked around for other banks. I looked at every one of their fee structures and I went and found the one that had hardly any fees at all.
Yeah, now up to 500,000 people are tipped to be involved in this class action. And that's at this stage. Just reading from the story here on Yahoo News. Official figures show that the banks collected nearly $1.2 billion in fees. This is the, you know, dishonor fees or whatever, the late fees, in the 2008 financial year. The money came from honor and dishonor fees on bank accounts and from over-the-limit and late fees on credit cards. Financial Redress, a subsidiary of litigation funder IMF, is funding the litigation against 12 banks, who says they have illegally charged well over $5 billion over the past 6 years. Now, I mean, this is actually totally new to me, Josh. I didn't know this was happening, but we've always felt instinctively it was wrong, but we didn't know it was illegal. I mean, what else are they doing that's illegal? You know what I mean?
Like, so what's illegal?
To charge fees is illegal. But they've just been doing it forever, haven't they? I mean, but apparently
how is that illegal? I mean, I don't understand. How can a fee be illegal? Either it's in a contract and you sign the contract or it's... Unless they never mention it in any contract and you never sign anything. I know I don't. Like, maybe that's what the illegal side of it is. Or maybe it's illegal not to show all your fine print easily or something like that.
Yes, I mean, it may be in the fine print, but even so, you can't just put things in the fine print of an agreement if you can't put anything into a contractual agreement and thereby make it legal. I mean, let's say at the supermarket they had a fine print, you know, as you walk in that said, look, you know, you'll have to have, you know, an anal rectal examination on the way out with a rubber glove. you know, that, sure, they could do that, but that wouldn't be legal. You know,
right.
I mean, they couldn't just say, well, you, there was a contract, you saw the, you know, you read the sign and you walked in. You know what I mean? Like, that, you know, sorry to be, you know, obnoxious there, look, but I mean, I'm just saying as an example, you know, you can't.
Coles doesn't. I'd definitely be shopping at my local grocer if that was the case. Well, I shop at the local grocer anyway.
Yeah,
I do feel like Coles do regularly examine me after the weight of my wallet. There must be some more cash in there somewhere.
They do.
I mean, they charge so much. It's incredible. I guess it's just inflation.
They do. Diverting. No, you're fine. But look, just moving on with the stories for tonight. Just want to talk a bit about, we've got a few things to cover here. I want to talk a bit about the Greek debt crisis, because we raised that last week. The Greek debt crisis, is it being purposely hyped and manipulated? And there's an interesting article here which comes from the economiccollapseblog.com. Is the Greek debt crisis being purposely hyped and manipulated? Everywhere you turn in the financial media right now, you see some expert declaring that the Greek debt crisis has become a contagion, which is going to spread all over the globe and which could potentially bring down the entire world economy. Now, certainly Greece has badly mismanaged their finances for decades, and without a doubt, they have gotten themselves into a huge mess. But could Greece bring down the entire world economy? Hardly.
Now, can I just interject there? That's not what it's about, folks. It's not that Greece is going to bring down the world economy. It's the fact that Greece is getting bailed out that will bring down the world economy. Because because bailing out a huge bank risk and then socializing the risk by heaving all the debts to the taxpayer is basically saying anyone in Europe can just do what they want and the risk will be socialized. So what we're seeing here is the abolition of free market capitalism.
I do believe you're on the right track there with that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, because these banks are basically saying, don't worry, I'll just borrow and borrow at 0% and hide all my crud toxic assets, and I'll buy up this and we'll have these credit default swaps and all this toxic crud, make billions off of it. And then when the creditor who you're selling it to loses billions, they go, bail us out, please. We need to start again. We need a new life. You know? Yeah. The end, and they just start the game again.
But there seems to be, as well as that sort of revolving door that you've described, there seems to also be an arrow of time here. I think that they're taking us in a direction where they have more and more centralized power than they've ever had before, and they've had heaps, right? But what they want to move to is one wherein we move to a situation, as you suggested, that is a form of a socialized economy. The supreme power resides in these financial bodies that can control policy. They can ultimately control laws, and that is another word for world government. Okay, so and if you know, for those out there who think, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had a world government? I've had people say that to me when it's been brought up, and they say, I don't mind. It'd be lovely to have a world government because then everything would be more peaceful. There wouldn't be wars. And when people say that, I just, you know, I feel the sweat breaking out. You know, I feel the sense of I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's almost like, it's like someone in prison saying, oh, you know what? I wouldn't mind if the whole of Australia was just a prison. Then I'd get out of this place. Then
then there wouldn't be a prison, yeah, because the whole world would be a prison. I just don't know what to – I don't know how to reach people who are in that mind state. I'd love to find some way to reach out to them. But I think they're going to have to feel the pain of it before they wake up. And at the moment, they're not feeling it enough, and they can live in this kind of fantasy about things. Well, look,
I mean, honestly, this is how I reach those people. I'll just throw some statistics at them, right? Cancer. Cancer killed something, it's a huge amount. It's a huge amount. It's like 2 million people a year or something crazy. Like, it's massive. Now, governments have killed their own people. So these are people killed by their own governments, not governments from foreign lands in wars. This is governments killing their own people. 260 million people in the last 100 years, thereabouts, give or take, people have died by their own governments, by the hand of their own governments. I mean, governments are violent institutions, folks. You cannot trust and have mammoth, huge governments. If you're going to have a government, keep it as small as you humanly possibly can.
And scrutinize everything it does.
And scrutinize everything.
Make sure that the power isn't centralized in one place. Because what I believe we have at the moment is we do have what looks like, you know, democracy in the Greek, you know, word concept of what democracy was invented to be, rule of the people. It does look that way from one angle. You know, you see, these leaders come and go. You know, it's not like we have one dictator or king who stays there all his life, which is what we had in previous centuries. You know, we have alternating, you know, people taking these roles. But what we see behind that is that there are groups controlling those people. And I saw a really interesting description of this in the internet somewhere recently, where it suggested that, you know, people talk about, you know, the groups that might control the world, whether we call them the Illuminati or the, you know, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg groups. What was being proposed there is that real power has always been in, you know, I mean, real power in the sense of totalitarian power has always been manipulated by these types of groups. And whereas the actual apparent leader, like the king or the dictator, has always been a puppet, and that's the way they work. They work in little groups, which often are at war with each other too, but can commandeer large amounts of resources and power, and they put forward their pawns, you know, and that'll be the person you call the leader.
Sure,
that's a pawn for these groups who work that way. That's how they work with the system. And, you know, I think maybe in ancient times it might have been done through the, you know, the high priests who ran, you know, behind the scenes creating the pharaoh or the, you know, the great leader, the great Caesar or whatever. And this type of manipulation of people to get people to believe in a power figure is still being done, but it's now being done through this guise of democracy. But then again, getting back to this story about why we're talking about Greece and what's happening right now, is that we seem to be moving back to a more ancient, barbaric type of system where the state is more like a all powerful god, and you know, and the figures that come in to fulfill the role of like of prime minister or president are themselves, you know, often sacrificed to that. They could even be sacrificial victims.
They become a cult of celebrity. I mean, look at Obama when he was inaugurated. I mean, he was an absolute cult figure. He was a bigger celebrity than any other celebrity in the world. His brand name was probably, in terms of brand strength, was as strong as Google. And by that I mean, if you ask, you know, 1,000 people in random places around the world who Obama is, they probably recognize the name just as much as they would Google or McDonald's. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But what I'm saying is people worshipped him at that stage. I mean, there was literal worship of a politician. Now, yeah, it's fantastic that a black president got in. I was very happy about that fact, but because it shows some sort of progression, at least in America. But at the same time, folks, he's a total muppet. He's a puppet. And honestly, this is what really does my head in. When people say, "Oh no, but democracy," you know, it's the best system we got. And you think, okay, right. But do you think that the government is run by the people? Do you think the democracy that we've got is, well, it's the masses, it's the masses, the majority have the vote. And nothing could be further from the truth. It's the minority that has the vote. It's the lobbyists that have the vote. And the lobbyists are such a small group of people. It's unimaginable. And they're the ones that have the vote. And now, when you look at Greece, who do you think has the vote now? Well, it's not the people, it's the creditors, it's the foreign creditors.
And these creditors were able to enforce these draconian measures on Greece so that the average person who's just, you know, it's not their fault that the economy collapsed. And it really annoys me when I hear people buying into this, oh, it's the Greeks, you know, they couldn't manage their economy. Yeah,
gee, oh,
they're idiots,
they're idiots,
you know, they should suffer.
They drink tea and they have coffees and drink and
they're
food,
lazy, they're lazy.
Which they do.
Yeah.
Look, and they aren't the hardest of working crew, I must admit.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone who's got a family who has to survive, has to work, it's the same in any country on earth. Like, it's not that different.
And you make a choice. Well, I don't want to be super rich and I want to, you know, there's that juggle between work and life. And I know that Spanish, they enjoy life a lot more. So they'll have their siestas and they won't work their butts off. Whereas the Germans, they're crazy workers. They just work, work, work. Yeah. Aussies, they work, work, work. You know, generally. Australians are very hard workers too. But what were we getting there? I've lost track. Sorry.
Well, I'm just pointing out that these generalizations about whether such and such a country is lazy or not. You're just falling into a trap if you buy into that. Because honestly, we're all human beings. We're all very similar all around the world. And anyone who lives in a large city. It doesn't really matter where you live. The conditions and the things you have to do are similar. So, you know, and the same, they could easily have done it in Australia, but instead they bailed us out, which is they gave us money. See, there's two things you can do. You can either give people, you can pour money into the economy. When you have an economic crisis, you can either pour money into the economy, like the stimulus, right, they did here, or you can make everyone very poor. Well, what they're now doing in Europe is selectively in certain countries.
Oh, hang on.
They're just destroying people's quality of life.
Well, both of those things, where if you stimulate the economy, and whether you make people poor, they're the same thing in my view.
Well, because maybe ultimately long,
you
in
can
a longer
tax
term,
the
but in
people,
yeah, yeah.
Or you can inflate the currency by printing money. Both of them are the same thing.
I think you're right. I think in the end, I think it'll come back to bite us what they've done here. But in the short term is that, you know, like unemployment is quite low, you know, and there is a lot of, you know, opportunity for people to make money.
What's the employment? When I look around,
yeah,
there literally so many jobs are created from what? From the taxpayer. All these people, yeah, they might be private companies building these schools and these pink bats and these and these bridges and these things that are happening, but they're all paid by the government. So what are we turning? We're turning into this sort of socialist regime where everyone is dependent on the government spending. Now, where does the government get its money from to spend? A, they borrow it, and the future generations pay it off by paying off the bonds that they sell to spend now. Or B, they just printed into existence, which basically inflates us and makes everyone lose their pension. You know,
yeah.
When currencies get printed up, that's what happens, folks. People's pensions go down in value because you might have $100 in your bank, and you know, I'll just break it down slowly. And we've got a very smart listenership, but you know, this is very key because I talk to people all the time and they go, "Oh, inflation." Yeah, they don't even know what it means. They just think, "Oh, things just go up in price. That's just natural." No, it's not, folks. It's not natural. It's absolutely orchestrated, and it's a tax that the government knows they can get away with, because no one will say, "Oi, you're taxing us." Because what they do is they print the money into existence. So let's say you're living on an island and you have $100 and the other person has $100. Other two people have $100. What happens if you all of a sudden put another $200 into that island? All of a sudden, there's not more money going around. Well, there is, but it becomes worth less. All of a sudden, the things that you're buying with it cost twice as much because there's just more stuff going around. So the $100 that one person saved is worth less now. So the person that perpetrated the printing is richer in the first instance. It's always the people the elite that get hold of the money first hold its value. And then once it filters through, it becomes worthless.
Thanks for that, Josh. Look, we just got a break coming up. I'm going to give you a bit of music here, and we're going to get into some of the darker topics after the break. Here goes.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old black. cot and for your ribbons and bow. And everybody knows, and everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. Cross on top of Calvary to the beach of Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia.
Oh, everybody knows that that song goes on and on and on.
Yeah, like you were saying, it's like, you
it's
know,
a
this
long song.
Everyone's got this broken feeling, like their mother or their dog just died. Look, just before we get into the wickedness of things again, I just want to talk about things that are happening on the ground here. We've got a great film night coming up in Sydney. We are Change Film Night, and it's Jason Burmes' film, The Invisible Empire, it's called. And it's about the New World Order. And it's about these changes that we see, that we've seen over the years, over the decades, and that have really increased since September 11, 2001, encompassing many of the things that we talk about on the show. It's a pretty good film. And it's going to be a great night. We're actually getting quite a good response to this film night. Got a lot of people involved. Got people involved on a helping level. We're going to have some music on the night, and a couple of speakers lined up. So it's going to be a really good event. And it, to me, a lot has changed. I just want to point this out for our listeners. You know, a lot has changed over the last year and a half. There's been a lot of grassroots movements developing in this country, and it's quite amazing to watch. So at the same time as we're seeing all this bleak, dark stuff that we've got to talk about, there is this awakening going on. There are all these movements, all these groups, you know, the Truth Movement Australia, the Australian Sovereignty Party, the Australian Pirate Party, the Zeitgeist Movement, you know, the Venus Project and all that, and you know, not to mention all the pre-existing, you know, civil liberties groups and even GetUp, you know, which I'm not a huge fan of because I think they're a little bit, you know, manipulated. But, you know, they kicked in against the internet censorship regime, which was great. And, you know, and of course the climate skeptics, who I'm totally in support of, who I know had a huge effect by bringing Lord Monckton out here on changing government policy. So things are really developing, and we've got reason to feel positive if we continue with this. But there's always the imperative is not to sort of hunker down. Don't get into that hunkered down mentality. Don't get into the mentality of thinking that you'll just always stay anonymous. You know, a lot of people that I've spoken to over the years about very controversial topics like 9/11, they want to remain anonymous. And although I sympathize with it, I don't agree with it. No, and it doesn't matter who you are. You know, I don't care what your job is. Being anonymous is not going to help us forward. Okay, and I do recognize there are risks, because like some people are in high profile jobs in the media, and I've spoken to people who are totally on board with what we know about, or you know, what we suspect about 9/11, but they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to be known for talking about it. Well, you know, you've got to. Some people have got to take a bullet. Okay, it's harsh. It's harsh, right? And the ones who are in the media, or the ones who have prominent jobs, whether you might be like a lawyer or a barrister, or you know, a solicitor, or a, you know, a, I don't know. Take your pick. You know, a politician. You know, maybe you're an MP. You know, and you just don't want to go there. You know,
no. Well, it always becomes cool once you know, once a lot of people have paved the road.
Yeah.
By sticking their neck out on controversial topics, then all of a sudden it becomes cool, and everyone, oh no, I was always in support of that. Yeah. Mm. You know, like you said, I think we really have covered some great ground. People are getting active, and you know what? I think people are getting out from behind their screen, which is wonderful to see. Because a lot of people in the 90s, the late 90s, early noughties, were really stuck behind a monitor, campaigning on the internet, and I think there's been some change of where people are getting away from their monitor. It's great to be behind it and spread the word and stuff, but to be seen physically still has a massive effect, and it has more of an effect. Just like when you write letters to your MPs instead of an email, those letters get read a lot more than an email does.
So true. And look, let me just talk for a minute about We Are Change, wearechange.org.au, because We Are Change in Australia is actually really developing, and I'm really pleased to see this. And, you know, I kicked it off here with wearechange.org.au in about, I think it was November of 2008, actually, about a year and a half ago. And I chose, like, to me, what appealed to me about We Are Change, and still does, and if you go to their site now, wearechange.org, for the original site, you know, they've got Gandhi up there. Like, they've put Gandhi up, and that's the kind of person that inspires them. And that really says a lot to me. Okay. There's very few activist groups out there who would use Gandhi as their main image. I think it's really profound. It's really important. I really do believe, you know, I've seesawed a bit with my feelings about We Are Change. I think, you know, I've had some doubts about it. But what I see there is there's an idea in this group that is really solid, and it's based on truth and peace, non-violence, and the highest principles of human behavior and human potential. And it's tolerant, okay? Yeah. Like, it doesn't.
And the speeches that Luke Radowski gives, he's the founder of We Are Change in New York.
Yeah,
they are just awesome. You know, they are really well thought out, and always based on self strength, and peace, and respect, and love. and never in a, you know, hateful or I mean, well, you know, I mean, there are hate when it comes to like New World Order scum and stuff like that, but most of the stuff, 95% of the speeches are always about self-empowerment and feeling love within your community. And I think that's so important. It really is. And they have put a lot of work into and a lot of time raising money for first survivors of 9/11.
Yeah, they are really focused. Sorry. They're connected to the community and to helping people.
Homeless people. They've done a lot of work for the homeless. I mean, you know, really making change at a local level. And I think that's really positive and wonderful.
Yeah, and I think that We Are Change in Australia can do the same things. Mm. And I'm really keen to see We Are Change just take off, you know, for it just become a truly, you know, independent entity which is owned by the people. We've got a quite active We Are Change Western Australia group operating in Perth. They've got their own website.
Yeah, we've and got a Queensland.
Yeah, we've got a quite active We Are Change Brisbane. Nothing much happening in Melbourne yet, but there's a lot of people who want it to happen and been, you know, trying.
Well, make it happen, folks.
Quite,
make it, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, just if you're in Sydney and, yeah, we've already got it, it doesn't matter. Join. And there's nothing to join anyway. You just basically, you just have a look at the website, have a look at you know, there's basic rules of engagement. Never swear. Never be aggressive or angry. Always be respectful. Always call people sir and mister. And that way, you know, even if you're being yelled at and stuff by some guy that you've stuck a camera in their face and you're exposing them and they're yelling at you all sorts of curse words, you're always very respectful. And that's what I really like about We Are Change, because they cannot bring you down or arrest you if you know your rights and if you're respectful. And I think, you know, that's all you need to do. So just do it, folks. Just get out there, get a camera. And if there's someone that has been really shamefully corrupt, stick a camera in their face and stick it on YouTube. And We Are Change.
And you know, yeah, be robust, be forthright, assertive, but you don't have to be violent, you know. You know, Gandhi was not a pacifist. I've got some really interesting interviews that I listened to with Norman Finkelstein. I think I played some of that on the show a while back, but I don't know if I played the whole lot of it, because he goes on to talk a lot about Gandhi, and he makes the point that you know, this idea of pacifism, it's not really pacifism. Gandhi wasn't passive. There was nothing passive about what he did. It was very active.
Oh, it was just
committed
absolutely
to nonviolence. But yeah. The word pacifism has connotations of just sort of, you know, lying down and, you know, just basically not, you know, not doing anything. That's not what we mean when we talk about the nonviolent approach. It's very active. It's assertive. Yeah. And it's risky. You know, you can get hurt doing it. Okay. I mean, Gandhi paid the price with his life. Okay. Those who take this, Martin Luther King did it, right? And the Kennedys. I mean, particularly, you know, the younger Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, who followed in the footsteps of his brother, and went forward bravely to try and, you know, bring justice, and he got shot down like a dog. Okay, and that's what happens to leaders. You know, leaders can end up getting hurt in this way. You have to be. To understand that is a potential risk, okay, at some point down the track, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not even, maybe years from now, but, you know, conflicts can develop. So anyway, but it's great. I'm really pleased to see that We Are Change is taking off, and the wearechange.org.au domain, I'm now getting more collaboration from people who are going to start contributing to that domain to start blogging there, because I've been quite strong from the beginning on wanting to have, it's great to have the regional We Are Change groups, but you also, to have a We Are Change Australia presence where everyone can contribute, to having a really interesting blog site is the goal that I've been trying to work towards. And I've had to kind of handhold this for a long time, but I think now finally we're starting to get over the line. And I'm actually going to start to invite people to come to join the wearechange.org.au domain as contributors, so that that site can start to become a portal for information and news, just like wearechange.org in the US is. And fingers crossed, but I think we're heading in the right direction there.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Okay. We were talking before about what happens when, you know, sometimes you wish that people who have power and influence would take a step in the right direction and speak out. And I just want to give an example of a man who has done just that and suffered greatly from it. And I've only recently fully understood the depth of what he did and, you know, the ramifications. And the man is Dr. Andrew Wakefield, a British doctor, surgeon, and researcher. And he was responsible for investigating the connections between autism spectrum disorder and vaccinations. And his particular area of research was the MMR vaccine. That's the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, which... when he started investigating autism, a lot of the people he spoke to told him that they were certain that their child's condition had started from when they were vaccinated. I mean, there was a direct correlation. It wasn't just, it was like the same day. And what he found was that there was a huge pattern of people with this disorder having inflammatory bowel disease. And quite often it would start immediately after the vaccination. They would start have massive diarrhea, and then as babies, and then or as young children, and then their cognitive development would seize up at that point. And these kids would just regress. They would never develop normal functionality, normal skills, and their whole lives just become totally destroyed and compromised. And these parents would, you know, they would go to their GPs, and they would say, look, you know, you had the vaccine and suddenly this happened, and they would be told, no, nothing to do with the vaccine, no. And then they would be sent off to a specialist, and they'd tell the specialist, oh, no, nothing to do with the vaccine, no. And they would investigate, you know, the specialist would diagnose and say, unfortunately, your child has a rare, you know, condition called autism, and there's no cure, and you know, that's just the way it is. It's unfortunate. You're going to have to learn to live with it. And that's basically what these people get told. Yet they saw, and their own experience was that they saw the child was given a vaccine and immediately became ill and was never normal again. Now, just that on its own, I mean, this has happened to hundreds of thousands of people, millions. The numbers are huge. I mean, it's happened all over in the United States. It's happened in the UK. And we know that because it's documented. It's happening everywhere else in the world too, of course. It's just that we don't have access to so much information from other places in the world. But these vaccines have been given everywhere, you know, throughout the globe. And imagine how it feels as a parent, folks. Imagine how it feels to see this happen to your child, to know instinctively by just, you know, a parent's, you know, common sense what caused it, and then to be told by every person you go to that, oh, no, it's nothing to do with that, nothing to do with that. And then, you know what? Some of these people who have had their kids suffer this way have actually, because they trust authority, right, because despite their doubts, they do trust, they don't think they're being lied to. No one wants to think that. They've taken their kids to be vaccinated a second time. And that's what breaks my heart, is that when these people who've, like, already, you know, their kid's been half destroyed by one of these vaccines, and because they've been told the vaccine has nothing to do with it, they go and take the second set of shots. And that finally destroys the kid. That destroys the child. They shut down, you know. Their immune system is wrecked, and they become these abnormal children who never develop normally. I mean, how heartbreaking is that, Josh?
No,
for a parent to see,
yeah,
that.
And as we heard last week, it gets to the point of death.
Yeah, I mean, and we haven't we don't have a clear knowledge of how many children have died because, again, it's not admitted. Why is it not admitted? Because, and the principle behind this, which I'm going to try and get the, I've got an interview here with this Dr. Wakefield where he articulates it so well, is that it's about public policy. You see, public policy rules, meaning we've decided that it's good for everyone to be vaccinated. Now, if X number of people suffer because of being vaccinated, they must become non-persons. In other words, you don't admit it, you don't talk about it, they have no voice. Because it's good for the public good, for the greater good, that we do it. We mustn't admit, we mustn't allow people to think that certain people will suffer because then they might not get their shots.
Yeah.
What kind of a philosophy is that?
Well,
can someone please explain
herd,
to me?
Herd immunity thing. I mean, just the concept of herd, like we're animals.
But it allows, it completely violates one of the basic laws that a doctor must follow, the Hippocratic Oath. You know, if someone is injured, you have to heal them. And you know, first do no harm. You know, that's the Hippocratic Oath. Now, you know, as I said before, if someone is injured by an allergic reaction to any drug, it's recognized that has to be noted, has to be put on their medical record. And
A lot of people, you know, the vaccines don't have a major problem with, and you never really know. I mean, I've had the vaccinations when I was a child, but I would never know how good my brain could have been without it.
Well, that's right. Yeah, there are all these uncertainties. But I just wanted to point out that Dr. Wakefield is not an anti-vaccine campaigner. He believes in vaccination. Okay. So what we're really talking about here is not like an absolutist argument. It's not a black and white argument about you know, where the people who don't believe in vaccination versus the people who believe in vaccination.
I don't think, you know, I am still in the thought that the concept of a vaccination could work.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. I mean, who knows what we can achieve in society and you know, amazing stuff. So I'm not saying, oh, gee, no, we could never cure someone pre the condition. Of course we could, but I feel that there's been mass injustices done over the years.
Yeah, it's just that when you do,
and it's
when
shut
you...
down in the mainstream media. It's absolutely shut down. The conversation is shut down. The people researching is shut down. Like this doctor you're talking about. And ridiculed and laughed at and sued and lives destroyed purely because they want to help children or they want to help people. They want to get information out. Hey, some people have allergic reactions to this stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, sure, maybe it is for the public good that we have a vaccine program, but the people that have been hurt by it, you know, you've got a moral duty. But this is what I'm trying to understand, the philosophy behind those who believe the greater good overrides your existence. So,
well,
in other words,
it's a function of, again, lobbyists in government controlling the money that has been forcibly extracted from the productive class to, taxes there, and then given to these corporations to basically give free, in inverted commas, when it's not free because you've paid through your taxes, vaccines to everybody. So instead of selling vaccines to only people that actually want it, everybody pays, whether you believe in it or not, and it's forced, you know, almost forced, and it's not forced, but a lot of people have a big trouble trying to get their children through school or into childcare centers if they haven't been vaccinated. So it's almost a force. And they say, well, why don't you take it? It's free anyway. Well, it's not free. I've paid for it. We've all paid for it. And it's again, this fascistic corporate government mixture that's in my mind to blame for a lot of this, because they don't want to ruin this amazing deal that they've got by saying, oh, there's doubt about this. There's doubt about it. Well, there's so much doubt that actually, we better not just pay for it through their taxes. Let's privatize it. And if people want it, they can pay for it privately.
Absolutely.
Which it should be.
Now, look, I'm just going to line up some audio from this interview. So just stand by while we do that. Okay, I've just lined up the bit that we want to play for you. And just some context here, Dr. Wakefield is talking about, in this interview, a whole lot of things and the history of how he got involved in the research and what he discovered about an indemnity that was essentially given to the vaccine manufacturer by the government, which basically made sure that the vaccine manufacturer would never be liable for any injuries caused by the vaccine. But one of the consequences of that was that the government would then be liable. And when he started doing his research, he started getting warnings that this was dangerous because it would lead to the government being sued, and they couldn't allow that research to continue. And he said he didn't even fully understand it because he didn't understand that this indemnity had been given to the vaccine manufacturers. And this of course, is outrageous. But what's even more outrageous is that when the government is liable, the government, because they have such control over the entire system, over universities and research institutions and hospitals, they can basically make things disappear. They can, if you have an illness, they can say, well, you didn't have that illness, because they're the government, you know. They control what you see, what you experience as reality, supposedly. Of course, it's nonsense. But that's kind of the mindset that goes with these people. And he's now about to talk about the mindset and the morality of these people. There's a bit of background noise there, Josh. I don't know what that is. A bit of jingling going on there.
Yeah, sorry, that's just Emily typing.
Yeah, okay, thanks for that. Just try and...
If you could try and keep it down.
Yeah, thanks for that. Okay, we'll just kick off the audio now with the doctor talking forward on from this crisis that was... There were some discoveries made about the MMR vaccine. It was actually withdrawn in some countries. In other countries, it was merely changed its name. And in the third world, it was just distributed, you know, widely, even though it was known from research that there were problems. So I'll just start the audio from this point.
And you would think, under those circumstances, having withdrawn this vaccine in Australia and Canada and Japan and the United Kingdom, that would be it. They ditch it. They get rid of it. Because it's not safe. But no, they go on making it. And what do they do with it? They ship it out to the third world. And there was a mass vaccination campaign in Brazil in the 90s, where they gave, ostensibly, the great majority of Brazilian children a revaccination with MMR during a very short space of time, with the rabi-containing vaccine, which they knew to be dangerous. And what it produced was an epidemic of meningitis, a huge peak in the number of cases of meningitis. And there was a paper written about it afterwards. And one of the points in the discussion of the paper that came up was, perhaps it's not a good idea, in effect, to do mass vaccination campaigns because it reveals the true incidence of side effects to a vaccine. Well, who wrote that? Who, in God's name, wrote that? Absolutely. So this is the, if you like, the morality, the integrity of the people you're dealing with in this. Why is that vaccine even on the shelf? Why is it being sold at cut price to third world countries? What's the thinking behind this? Because it's certainly not a moral imperative. It must be a commercial one. And so that's why we're here, and that's why we'll remain here, and that's why we'll continue to fight this kind of thing. Because you can't treat people as expendable. You can't damage them and put them to one side. And Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf once wrote, the greater truth excludes the lesser. And these children are the lesser truth in the world of, or the mind of, people like Adolf Hitler. And that kind of thinking failed in the 1940s, and it's going to fail now. You cannot treat people in a civilized society as expendable. Yes, there may be an argument for a vaccination program that protects the greater good. But that does not mean that you can render those who are damaged, just consign them to the dust cart because they're an inconvenience, or their mere presence undermines public confidence. Better to keep them hidden away. And there are too many of these children now. They won't be hidden away. And parents are getting very, very angry, and they've every right to be angry. And the truth will come out. And it's going to be a very, very, very painful truth when it does come out. And the tragedy is it's going to damage public confidence in vaccine policy across the board. Because people will say, we don't believe you any longer. We don't trust you. You lied to us. And when that happens, and all vaccination policy is compromised as a consequence, the whole pillar of public health comes tumbling down. And a lot of trouble is going to ensue, because you're going to deal with a population then who are not protected from these infections. And we're going to run into big problems. And that, the responsibility for that, lays squarely at the door of the public health figures and their commercial partners who have allowed this to happen.
Okay, I'll just pause it there. I just wanted to particularly play that segment because it demonstrates several things. One is that Dr. Wakefield is a totally orthodox mainstream doctor and scientist. This is not a question of, you know, vaccine deniers, conspiracy theorists versus the scientific establishment. He is a member of the establishment who supports vaccination. Now, my position on vaccination is I'll never have another vaccine, okay? I'm quite clear for myself, right? But I respect the fact that he and his professional knowledge, standing, whatever, says that vaccines can work, right? But he is standing up for the principle of, well, if you do it and it does injure someone or hurt someone or kill someone, you have to do everything you can to restore justice and to heal those people who've been damaged. You know, because you thought you were making them well, you made them sick. It's the worst thing that you could possibly do, right? So it's a total tragedy if it occurs. And even if you accept, as he does, that vaccines do work, you have to have an absolute commitment to making clear records whenever someone is injured, you know, be it rarely by vaccines. Make sure they never get those vaccines again if they are allergic to them, or if there's a bad batch of vaccines, as he's saying, a particular vaccine itself is found to be flawed, then you discontinue using that. I mean, this is just basic human common sense, basic morality, isn't it? I mean, it's nothing complex about this. But for some reason,
I mean, if you get sick from eating a bad steak, you don't go back to the restaurant. You don't go, oh no, well, I could have actually gotten sick not from the bad steak. It might have been when I might have just had a pre-existing condition and all of a sudden got sick. Now, you just instinctively know it was that steak that I ate at that restaurant, so I'm never going back there.
Yeah,
if then you look on the internet at reviews of the restaurant and you know, 100 people say, oh, it was great, but, you know, 20 people said, I got violently sick, and 3 people said, oh, my daughter died after eating there, you'd be like, well, I'm not going to eat there.
Yeah, yeah. And you certainly wouldn't want to have people telling you, you know, in positions of authority with white coats on, that you really need to take your children to eat at this restaurant. It's really important.
Because if you don't eat, you die.
Yeah, and if you don't, it means you're really a bad parent.
Well, hang on. There's other options to eating. Yeah, that you can eat some other stuff. You can make stuff. You know, you don't have to go to this restaurant. And just like vaccines, there's other options. There's ways of looking at the certain disease that you want to protect yourself against, and have a look at the other options available to you.
Yeah, look, I recommend really strongly. I mean, my highest recommendation to this video. I really, this is my highest 5-star recommendation. You need to watch this video. Everyone needs to watch this video.
What do they type in? Andrew Wakefield.
Yeah, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, I guess. Yeah, your voice is breaking up there, Josh. We might have a really bad signal. We might have to call you back in a second. Doctor blamed for the MMR scare speaks out. That's the title of the article. It's posted at a blog page called Golden Hawk Projects. It's actually part of a film. Now, there's two films you can watch on here. One is the series of interviews with Dr. Wakefield. Another is more of a documentary that was made about Dr. Wakefield, which looks really good too. I've only just started to watch it, but it looks really excellent. This is made by proper documentary filmmakers. It's really, really good, folks. I would like to actually screen this. I'm thinking about doing a film screening of this in Sydney as our next event after we do the New World Order one. So there we have it. I just want to get into just discussing a little bit this idea that he's talking about there, about how people could say that, you know, the greater good excludes the lesser good, because there really is some kind of a warped philosophy there, and it appears to be at the heart of this, of the black heart of this thing we call the New World Order. The greater good excludes the lesser good. And if you've got a copy of Mein Kampf, Andy, or you want to Google it, because this apparently was the Hitler's view. And it's kind of a fascist view, you see. It's a view that basically says the individual can just be discarded. The individual is nothing. Only the state exists. Only the Volk, you know. I am Volk, you know.
Yeah, the tree doesn't matter. But the forest does.
You know, Ein Reich, Ein Volk. You know,
that's a great German accent you got there.
Thanks. That was the sort of the ranting, foaming at the mouth, insanity, of the Nazi era, and. You know, we don't see that same sort of, we don't see the paraphernalia of it now, but we see it in this mentality of...
It comes down to this. I'm sorry, Harold, but it comes down to this. A lot of people say, oh, well, I kind of agree with that. You need a, you know, it's the greater good. Yeah? What if it comes down to you? Let's personalize this.
Yeah.
What if it comes down to you, where you are in a situation where you are, where you don't want something that everybody else does, where you don't want something because it's going to kill you.
Yeah, it might be the greater good. It might be great for society, but it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, just happen.
How would you feel about that? Yeah. Will you then still have this moral high ground of, oh, yeah, well, it's better for the greater good. I will go down with my heart on my hand, singing the Australian national anthem and drowning. You know, I mean... It's ridiculous. Of course you're not. You're going to fight tooth and nail to change whatever it is, the situation that you're in.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people get totally mysticized with this sort of, this vague sense of, you know, these vague things where people say, they have these philosophies without personalizing the philosophy. They just sort of think, oh, yeah. No, I'm totally for that. Totally for that. You say, well, what about you personally? If this happened to you, the individual, and they cringe and they start, and then they get angry at you for even bringing it up.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff here. I'm just going to quickly run through some headlines. We're probably going to have to wind up. Just some quick stories here. Bill Gates wants to zap your testicles, and create artificial
he's
clouds.
He's zapping mine 24-hour. I've got this laptop and it's like just keeps zapping me. I had to put it on my table. Is that what you're talking about?
It's true, folks. Bill Gates wants to sterilize people around the world using ultrasound. And see, again, the greater good, you see. And... You know, he wants to, he, well, he's funded this technique of basically they aim ultrasound at your testicles. And that's how they sterilize men. And he also wants to create artificial clouds to stop global warming. he's got a machine for that as well.
Oh my God. Well, you know, the good thing is it's Bill Gates, so it'll just never work because there's anything that he makes is just crap. So
yeah.
My Windows machine is just constantly crashing. So.
Oh, yeah, it's a joke. It's a joke. You know, Windows is going to disappear. Look, it's going to be all Linux in a few years. You know, Linux is actually going to be the operating system of the future. I mean, even Macs run on a variant of Unix, right? So basically, just face it.
Just face it, folks. Linux. Yeah, chicks dig Unix. I remember seeing that T-shirt.
I like to get one of those. what else have we got here? Jeremy Scahill is a douchebag. Now, Jeremy Scahill is an investigative reporter who did some amazing work on exposing torture and the Blackwater security company in Iraq. And he did some really good stuff there. But this particular article, unfortunately, shows that the same guy, who's on Democracy Now! And he's been on all the talk show circuits. But he said some really obnoxious things about 9/11, people who seek justice for 9/11. And I don't know, it's an interesting story to read, and you can watch some video there. And you just question, you know, because, again, you know, he looks like one of the good guys. And to some extent, he is a good guy. But
he's
think
a very
that,
good guy. I mean,
yeah.
Some of the stuff he's exposed is just stunning. Yeah.
And you know, and people don't fault him for basically not getting involved in 9/11 truth. No one said, hey, we demand that you become a truther. But you know, he didn't have to totally pour, you know, vitriol on them. He didn't have to say totally obnoxious things about them. He could have just been like John Pilger, who just avoids the topic, you know. But again, it's some of these people. Who realize the danger of going into certain zones, they highlight, you know, when they do that, they highlight something really sick that they're actually part of. And, you know, I don't, you know, I still support what the guy and what he's done, but what he said about these people is, it's, I guess this is what happens in war, you know. There's huge sacrifices, huge threats. I mean, if he spoke out on 9/11, he might lose all his funding for his next book. He wouldn't be on the talk shows anymore. He'd disappear. And that's what happened. Look at Charlie Sheen. I mean, Charlie Sheen is probably going to be out of television now. Okay. I mean, he's got plenty of money. It doesn't matter to him, right? But the fact is, since Charlie Sheen came out the second time about 9/11, he had to quit his TV show. I mean, you know,
no, that's not true.
You don't think so?
No, his TV show is still going.
Oh, no, but that's it. It's over now. Like, it's, I think, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure. I read some stories about it. Like, there's actually, it might be still on television, but I think the show's over. Like, I mean, he's, you know what I mean? Like, he's not doing any more shows, as far as I know. I mean, the same thing happened to Rosie O'Donnell. Yeah, and she was huge
totally.
On television.
Rosie O'Donnell, yeah, that's exactly right.
She was huge on television. And then, you know, she got paid out quite well. And this is what happened to Charlie as well, as far as I understand. He got paid out really well. Like, he's not going to be badly off. But for someone who's mid-career, it's deadly, you know, if you do this. Mid-career, you won't get another book published. Anyway. Yep. Look, we're probably just about winding up for tonight. Unless there's anything you'd like to throw in there, Josh?
I would just like to please ask all our listeners to pass this podcast on to not this particular episode. If you like some of our older episodes, go check them out. But pass one of our episodes on to an older family member, someone who's a bit older, because I feel like, you know, generally speaking, some of the older crews is who really kind of get us.
Yeah.
They're the ones that have seen the tyranny in the past. And it's, you know, I mean, I'm only 32, and a lot of my friends, they wouldn't really have a clue, to be honest.
Yeah.
They sort of, oh, what are you on about and stuff, and they just live in this haze. But it's the older folks. So I'd really ask all our listeners to do one thing, and that's email one of our podcasts that you particularly like, and just send it and say, hey, what do you think of this, grandpa or mate or whatever, you know? What do you think of this? Or send it to, you know, put it on a post on a forum somewhere. You know, just ask people what they think of it, and spread the news, spread it around, spread the joy of information. It's free to do, and I think, you know, you have some great conversations.
Yeah, I so agree with that. That's a really excellent idea. The older people in our society are actually often the ones who are much more switched on.
And they're not heard. Yeah, and we got to listen to them again.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's been a good week, and again, reminder to anyone about who's listening about the film night coming up on 22nd for Sydney
in Newtown.
Newtown Neighbourhood Centre. It's an excellent opportunity if you want to see some original film and meet some people who are of like mind,
and also listen to some good music.
Yeah, there's going to be some music too. Yeah, it'll be
folks,
great.
Also, leave some comments if you disagree with us, or if you agree with us, leave some comments and on the website truthnews.com.au, and have a great week.
It's good night from us.